Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Today, an in-depth conversation with Congressman Adam Smith, a Democrat from Washington and chairman of the House Armed Services Committee.
And I've been in conversation today with a lot of leaders, including Secretary Austin, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Milley.
His reaction to the latest in Ukraine.
It's devastating. It's a nation of 40 million people facing, you know, an uncertain fate.
And does he think sanctions against Russia have gone far enough?
You definitely don't want to put him in an existential threat situation.
Plus, how Vladimir Putin may try to use America's political division against us.
Don't follow it. Don't believe it. Don't spread it.
Welcome to the Undivided Podcast. I'm Brandi Cruz. Podcast is coming to you a day early today because I wanted you to get the very latest on what's happening in Ukraine and sort of larger context and conversation for what it means for us in the United States. Now, I told you guys on Monday, this is not a breaking news podcast. This is not a foreign policy podcast. However, it is a podcast that can bring you good information on foreign policy from actual foreign policy experts, which is always the goal. Someone who I have always turned to during my career in TV news prior to this to get measured, informative, non-hyperpartisan takes on world events is Congressman Adam Smith. He is a Democrat from Washington, but he has not been afraid to pull punches in the past when it comes to the decisions of, for instance, Democratic presidents. He did have some criticism to levy against the Biden administration when it came to the bumbled withdrawal from Afghanistan. And so in the spirit of this podcast, which tries to look at things outside the political lens and implications and ramifications, Congressman Smith is really the perfect person to have that conversation. But most importantly, in this context, he is chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. So he has received briefings on the latest between Russia and Ukraine from not only the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but also the Secretary of Defense. So I was very grateful he took some time today to chat on the podcast about what he has been hearing, his reaction to the very latest. I spoke to him after President Biden addressed the world, really, about the latest that's happening in Ukraine, the attacks being carried out by Russia in Ukraine, and also what the U.S. and its allies are going to do. So quickly, let me bring you up to speed on that. President Biden announcing some new, stricter punishments against Russia meant to cripple its economy.
This is going to impose severe cost on the Russian economy, both immediately and over time. We have purposely designed these sanctions to maximize the long-term impact on Russia and to minimize the impact on the United States and our allies.
Of note, the president making it clear that there will not be, at this juncture, American troops on the ground in Ukraine.
Our forces are not and will not be engaged in the conflict with Russia in Ukraine. Our forces are not going to Europe to fight in Ukraine, but to defend our NATO allies and reassure those allies in the East.
So I spoke with Congressman Smith at length, not only about the latest on the ground in Ukraine, not only about what President Biden had to say, but also I wanted to make sure I asked him about some of the divisions playing out here in the U.S. about what president could have handled this better, be it Biden or Trump. There's a lot of talk about that and how Vladimir Putin might actually try to use our divisions against us in his misinformation campaigns. Help people here understand the gravity of the moment.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we got to remember that the biggest gravity of the moment is the impact on the Ukrainian people. I was there last August, visited a couple cities in Ukraine. It's a normal country. They have a democracy, elected government. They're working to improve their economy. Now their lives are all in danger. Their entire worlds have been turned upside down by the decision of one man, Vladimir Putin, deciding to militarily invade the country. It's devastating. It's a nation of 40 million people facing an uncertain fate. And then beyond that, just the idea that, a nation decides to expand its borders through military force is something that we've been working for 75 years since the end of World War II to end. And in Europe, It has been ended. We haven't had this type of conflict in that long a period of time. Certainly there was, you know, an internal dispute in the Balkans that has risen to the level of conflict, but nothing like this. This is definitely memories of Hitler and World War II, and something the international community needs to stand up united against.
In terms of Putin, you know, he said for days this wasn't going to happen. Did you ever believe that there was a chance that either he wasn't going to do what he did in the last 24 hours or that any diplomatic approaches would be successful before it happened?
Well, I thought there was a chance, but I thought it was unlikely. Based on the briefings that I received and the intel that we saw, you know, we knew where Putin had amassed his forces, despite the fact that he was denying that. And we also knew that his intent was to do exactly what he's done right now, right down to, you know, where the troops have moved in from and what his game plan was. We had the intel on it. The intel told us he's going to go. So I always hoped that he would change his mind at some point, that the diplomacy would work. But I think, you know, we in the defense community have been anticipating this for some time, and certainly President Biden has.
The U.S. was very clear about what would happen if Putin did this. They laid out, you know, how strict the sanctions would be, yet he did it anyway. So I know the president just detailed additional sanctions, but certainly that had to factor into Putin's calculation before he entered Ukraine. So will it do any good is the question.
Well, by all reports, Putin has isolated himself a great deal. He's not, you know, prior to the last month or so, he hadn't been meeting with foreign leaders. He's surrounded himself by an ever-shrinking group of advisors who are primarily sycophantic yes people. So Putin's perception of costs, I don't think, is based in reality. So I don't think he did factor in exactly what was going to happen, because I don't think he was being told that. He was being told what he wanted to hear. Second of all, sanctions alone, you know, won't have that impact, because certainly, you know, there were sanctions placed on him after the Crimea incursion and the incursion in eastern Ukraine. So sanctions help. And these sanctions are way beyond anything that has been done before that will certainly have an economic impact. But I think there's three other key things in getting us to the goal. And the goal here is Putin cannot be successful in taking over Ukraine. He cannot be seen as, you know, having this be a victory, because then it just opens up the door to this type of attack in other nations and across the world, frankly. So we need to shore up our NATO allies, because by all reports, Putin is not going to want to stop at Ukraine. Poland, Romania, and the Baltic states are next on the front lines. We need to make sure that they have the weapon systems. We just agreed to sell a bunch of tanks to Poland, for instance. I was in Poland and Estonia last week ahead of the Munich Security Conference. The Poles were very happy to have that support, and they're also very nervous about what Russia would do next. So we have to put ourselves in a position to deter Putin's further aggression beyond Ukraine, number one. Number two, we need to supply the Ukrainian military with whatever support we can give them. And if this turns into something where the Russians are able to take over the country and it becomes an insurgency, we need to work with our allies to be creative about how we can support that insurgency so that the cost of this invasion outweighs any benefit Putin thought he might get. Lastly, we need to put China's feet to the fire on this. Because China's kind of been trying to play it both ways here, saying that they respect Ukrainian sovereignty, but on the other hand, you know, it was kind of Ukraine's fault. No, look, I mean, if China wants to be part of a community of nations here, then they have to recognize sovereign borders and protect them. And the reason this is important is those economic sanctions that we and our allies want to place on Putin are much more severe if China doesn't show up to bail him out. So we've got to make it known that if China's bailing out Putin, they're bailing out a war criminal, and the international community will hold them accountable for that as well.
Quickly on the sanctions front, when President Biden spoke today, he was asked twice directly, and he didn't answer about why not sanction Putin directly, personally. Why do you think the president won't answer that question, and why do you think that's not part of the sanctions that have been rolled out?
Honestly, I don't know, because I know that a central part of this approach is to go after the oligarchs and financiers and the people who support him. Now, I will say that, you know, look, I mean, one of the things that hasn't come up in some of my other interviews is, you know, Putin is, as I mentioned, isolated, dangerous, not seeing the world correctly, and he has a whole lot of nuclear weapons. So you definitely don't want to put him in an existential threat situation. Okay. We want to deter him from going further, from thinking this is to his benefit. But we don't want to back him into a corner that he can't get out of. And I don't know if that factors into the issue of whether or not to personally sanction him. But what we're hoping to do is to deter Putin. You know, we do not want a war with him. We're not sending U.S. troops to Ukraine to fight him. We do not want to directly fight Russia. But the best way, the only way to avoid that outcome is to be strong enough to deter him from further attacks. So that's the fine line that I think the president and all of us are trying to walk.
On that note, Putin came out, he delivered remarks basically just moments before the attack in Ukraine started. And he had this line where he said, you know, anyone who challenges us or tries to stop what we're doing will be met with a response unlike they've ever seen. Do you take that to mean a nuclear response?
Hard to say. I mean, it's a fairly typical thing to say when you're a bully and you're, you know, get out of my way or else, and you try to make or else sound as ominous as possible without specifics. So I wouldn't leap to that definitive conclusion, but certainly when we're calculating how to deter him, you know, the fact that he has nuclear weapons has to be factored in. We don't want to provoke that type of response. But wait, look, Russia can have its country, can have its borders. Nobody wants to attack Russia, okay? Nobody wants anything to do with what the existing Russian country is. He can do what he wants and lead his country. But if he is militarily threatening the rest of Europe, we must deter him from that. And I think that's the message that we need to send.
When you talk about deterrence and the path forward, the president said in his remarks, we will defend freedom. We will defend democracy. That is who we are. Why does that stop short of putting troops on the ground in Ukraine?
Well, a couple of things. One, Ukraine is not a treaty ally. They're not a member of NATO. We do not have a treaty obligation to do that. I don't think the president feels like he had the authority to do that, unless, you know, the Congress was prepared to pass a law to that effect. And second of all, because, you know, there's a fine line between deterrence and provocation. You know, we didn't want to provoke a direct war with Russia if we could humanly avoid it. It, you know, certainly is an enormous tragedy for Putin to attack Ukraine, as I described. It is a global tragedy if the U.S. and Russia get into a war. So, like I said, we're trying to strike that balance.
Just a couple things on the home front. To what extent should your constituents expect to see everyday impacts in their lives over this and over the sanctions?
Well, first of all, I want to point out that we have a very large Ukrainian American population, you know, in my district and in this region in general. And certainly their lives are impacted as they're worried about, you know, loved ones and family and friends back home and how they're going to be impacted. And I want to, you know, support the Ukrainian community in any way we can. And also there will be economic impacts. You know, certainly the results of these sanctions will have an impact on the economy. We've seen the stock market going down. We can certainly expect gas prices to go up. As Russia is one of the largest producers of energy in the world. And this will disrupt that to some extent. And there'll probably be other economic impacts as well. Certainly, you know, nothing on the level of what the Ukrainians are experiencing. And also, even from an economic standpoint, Europe is a lot closer to the issue and a lot more dependent upon Russia than we are. So they will face larger impacts. But the principle here cannot be overstated. You know, we cannot allow a world where, you know, you militarily attack a country just to expand your borders. So therefore, we have to stand united to try and come up with ways to deter Putin from doing that.
You said we have to stand united. That's where I want to end this conversation. I was on Twitter this morning, early morning hours. You know, I woke up like everybody else did and saw what was happening. The first place I saw it was on Twitter. And it is remarkable, the terrible political takes in this country, you know, people saying it wouldn't have happened under Trump, people blaming Trump for it happening now. To what extent do you think Russia will try to use the division in America and social media to try to spread misinformation or sow discord? And what should we be watching out for?
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, I want to let everyone know Twitter is not life.
Okay. Thank you, Congressman. Yes.
Yeah. And I really wish more people were aware of that. You know, there's 330 million people in this country and, you know, a couple dozen go on Twitter and everyone acts like that means something. It only means something to the extent you act, You know, you accentuate and spread the words of people who don't know what they're talking about. And I wish we were more aware of that. Yes, without question, Putin will try to exploit that. I've gotten some of that myself, that people, you know, have reached ridiculous interpretations of this and trying to spread it on social media. Don't follow it. Don't believe it. Don't spread it is the simplest way to go. And I will say that whatever a few people on Twitter have done, I was, as I mentioned, in Munich for the Munich Security Conference, a large bipartisan delegation, Republican House members, Republican senators, along with Democratic House members and Democratic senators, we're all on the same page on this. Okay. There is not a divide, even amongst people. I mean, Lindsey Graham was there leading a delegation. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, was there as leading the delegation that I was part of. A lot of people who we've seen, battle over many issues before on this, Republicans and Democrats are by and large united, whatever a few folks on either fringe might be saying. Pay attention to the majority of opinion, not to the fringes.
All right, Congressman, we appreciate the time. Anything else we need to know about your role moving forward as the chair of the Armed Services Committee?
Well, obviously, I've been in conversation today with a lot of leaders, including Secretary Austin, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Milley, and I will keep in touch with them to make sure that we're updated and that Congress is exercising appropriate oversight of the Pentagon defense response to this. That's my role at this point.
That, again, is my conversation with Congressman Adam Smith, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, a Democrat from Washington State. I always appreciate his very measured insight and analysis, so we will be checking back in with him, I'm sure, as things develop in Ukraine. One of the things I noticed right away this morning, and I mentioned it there to Congressman Smith, is how this is really highlighting some of the deep political divisions in our country. I just kept seeing terrible takes on Twitter this morning from political pundits and talking heads that I was really disappointed with, frankly. J.D. Rucker, for instance, he tweeted, "Russia does not fear our woke military or feckless commander-in-chief. Nobody does." The Daily Wire had an article that said, "Obama's White House doctor demands Biden take cognitive exam as Russia starts war. He's incoherent." And there's a lot of takes like that. And to me, the time to litigate what president could have prevented this or handled this better is not right now. The time to do that was during the 2020 presidential election. The American people spoke, but Joe Biden is the president. And so to try to demean him and question him on the world stage in this moment, I guess as an American, I don't understand the point of that. I don't understand how that's helpful. Now, there's something to be said about the press doing its job and its due diligence in questioning the decisions that the American president is making, questioning, sanctions, and does this go far enough, and questioning every action that he makes in a crisis. That's our job. But, attacking him simply for the sake of winning political points doesn't make a lot of sense. And so one of the things that I did today is I recorded newscasts, not only in the United States, but overseas, to see in real time how our media in America and how media overseas, like the BBC, for instance, was covering the latest developments on Ukraine, with a goal towards seeing who is offering the best actual information to its viewers. So Sunday, coming up on Undivided, I'm going to do an in-depth analysis of what I took away from watching all of these various newscasts at the same point in time. Perhaps it can help you figure out what news outlets are best to turn to in moments of crisis like this, because it can be very challenging. Twitter, Facebook, those are generally not good places to get information. So I plan to take you through sort of how I approach where I get information during a major event that I'm not covering myself. And like I said, I'm not an expert on foreign policy. And so I'm going to rely on people who are on the ground covering the issues, who have been covering the issues, who are experts on the issues, and use that information to the extent necessary, inform you about it. So I'm looking forward to talking about that, the press, its coverage of Russia and Ukraine, coming up Sunday on Undivided. You can watch my weekly Sunday digital show in its entirety by becoming an Undivided subscriber, patreon.com/undivided, or by becoming a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. Thank you. thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. If you're in the market for a new house, or maybe you want to refinance so you can make your existing house your dream house, I highly recommend 1530 Mortgage. Their goal is to treat you with respect, to treat your time with respect, which is important to all of us these days, and to get you into your dream home as quickly as possible. They are a company that has been incredibly supportive of me and my decision to go out on my own and launch an independent political venture outside of corporate media. And just the care and concern and support that they've shown for me as an individual makes me so confident that they are going to treat you with respect and that you can trust 1530 Mortgage with one of the biggest decisions that you will make in your life. You can find out more at 1530mortgage.com or call 206-207-7777. 1530 Mortgage, NMLS number 1761573, Equal Housing Opportunity. As always, thank you for listening and thank you for being part of a movement dedicated to giving common sense a comeback.